This episode was recorded in 2023. Welcome to Returnity. I'm Letty Gordon-Furs, founder of The Spring Back Guide. Every week, we'll be diving into the pressing need for better support on women's back-to-work journeys after maternity leave. You'll hear real-life stories from working mums where motherhood has transformed their careers, and get an inside look at the industry leaders at the forefront of innovating in this space. Ready? Let's go. Just to welcome Claire Waring. Thank you so much for joining me again, because we had so many technical difficulties, didn't we?
We did, but we will prevail. We're determined.
Prevail. Oh, that is word of the day. Yes, we will definitely prevail. So tell me, where are you in the world right now and what can you see in front of you?
I am in Sydney, Australia. Outside it is very dark. It's evening time here, but it's also very warm because we're in the lead up to Christmas. So it is summer as we record this. So I can't see much, but I can feel the heat of summer.
I am very jealous, but I'm not jealous of all the bugs that you get in Australia.
There is that. There are many things that will kill you in Australia. It's true. It's true. If you grow up with it, it's not so bad. You sort of live with it. It's fine.
So tell me about your immediate family unit. Who is in it?
I have two sons, Oscar and Frankie, who are teenagers now, actually. And we live in Sydney with my husband and a misbehaving cavoodle as well, completes our family. He is also male. So I'm the only female in the family, not by design, but that's just how it's turned out.
Oh, I love it. I'm also outnumbered, so I completely feel your pain. So tell me what your life was like pre-babies. What did you do pre-baby?
What did I do pre-baby?
Yeah.
I was in the world of design and advertising pre-baby, actually. Just before I had my first son, we'd returned from living in London for 4 years, where I worked as a digital art director, came back to Australia to become a creative director. And so I was right in the world of creativity and advertising at the time.
So London, and I know that Australia and London working culture is relatively similar, but when did you come back to Australia?
I was in London for 4 years. Mm-hmm. I came back to Australia in about 2003-2004. So I was back home for a couple of years before having a family.
Okay, well, the reason why we're having this conversation is because Claire is co-founder of something that I feel like is incredibly exciting. And it's all in the space of the mental load and also just the never-ending, what it seems like, task list of being a mum. So I feel like there must be a really interesting origin story behind this. And Claire is part of my Changemaker series, where I'm interviewing really, really exciting companies and founders of those companies just to kind of hear about how, I guess, capitalism and business is shaking up how we facilitate and support women to come back to work. So tell me about the origins. How did you start doing Gather? Where did this all come from, other than just being a mum? Because obviously going from design and advertising to doing this is really quite a different thing. So please tell me all about that. I would love to know.
Yeah, look, it is a bit, but I've always been in the innovation side of advertising. So I've always been in digital. So I was there in early days of websites and early days of apps and other things. It's something I've always been really excited about, that moment where technology and creativity come together. It's always been my sweet spot. So it's not entirely different from that area, but it's certainly a leap out of the corporate world, if you like. So I have lived in many places all over the world. London's one of them. I've also lived and worked in Asia and in Europe, in Copenhagen. I think I've probably tried every permutation of being a working mum that exists. I've tried being a full-time mum. I've tried being at work part-time. I've tried working when I had a full-time nanny and helper. I've tried working when I didn't have any of those things in Copenhagen. I've tried all of these permutations and lived in very culturally different places where the idea of family and we have kids and working mums is different. And the thing that I've found that is the same across all of it is that no matter how much help you have, women tend to take on this notion of mental load. So it's that invisible labour, as you mentioned, Letty, that is all about the thinking and the anticipating and the worrying and the organising of the schedules. Mums everywhere. And the thing about that I've always found and that I came to realise I wasn't alone. You know what it's like. You always think that you're the only one who really struggles yeah. with this juggling career and family. But what I came to realize, especially as I became a leader in the industry, is that not only was I struggling with it, but I saw women in my teams struggling with it. And I also saw it as a really key reason why women pull themselves back from their careers as they have families. Because to be quite honest, it's really tough. It's really tough to have a day job and also to want to be a great mum and manage everything that's happening for family. And we're in this really unique era right now where women have careers, but they're still also by society and also by their own, I guess, taking on, still expected to run the family full time as well. So it's basically like having two jobs. And that holds women back in their careers. And I came to the realization as I was delving into leadership and why there weren't more women leaders in the advertising industry, that the fact is that mental load makes it that much harder for women to progress their careers than it does for men, because we just don't walk into the office during the day with the same clear headspace as our male counterparts have. We've got a whole lot more going on and around and around and around in our minds as we juggle all of that family admin side. What I found was that men and women just aren't equal in that regard. And while the advice out there is to split the load equally with your partner, and while our partners are doing more of the physical work than they've ever done before, which is fantastic, we're making progress. 90% of women say they feel solely responsible for their family schedule. 90% of women take all of that on. And I think that splitting it with your partner doesn't work for most of the women and most of the families that I know. It's a really difficult thing to do. And having come from a technology and creativity background, my theory was, well, why can't technology help lift some of this load? Why does it just have to be splitting it between people? It's something that in the workplace we automate and we have people to help us with. So why can't we, if we think of the home like an organization, have something that helps mums, who are effectively the CEO of the home, manage that side of their lives so that they're not so weighed down by that burden, that invisible load of managing family as well as juggling their careers?
Oh my God, so much to pull out from what you said. Firstly, I guess the fact that you said that you'd been through so many different permutations of work. So you said you'd done full-time, you'd done part-time, you'd had full-time care, etc. Was there one of those that you found easier than others? Like which was the easiest? Because it's a question that I get asked so much from clients, which is, what should I be doing? But which did you personally find easiest and why?
I don't know if I found any of them easiest, to be perfectly honest, but what I would
relatively easiest, I guess.
Yeah. It's the best of the bunch. Look, it's tough, but I think that had I had my kids, so my kids are 13 and 16 now, they're teenagers, we're beyond the little kid stage. Had children in an age like we have now, where flexible working and working from home is a possibility, I think that part-time or even full-time would have been much, much easier, because I wouldn't have had to physically be in the office in order to be working.
Yeah.
And what I found was, and we're talking, you know, 15 years ago, you were either there and present and in person, or you were completely out of the picture. The whole idea of remote working didn't really exist.
No.
And so I think if I was to have my time over again now, I think that probably full-time work with a day or two where I could do that work from home, or even 4 days a week, I think would probably be my sweet spot under today's circumstances. Mm. But I think the thing that I found toughest was that if I wasn't in the office, people could never remember which days I was working. Yeah. They could, even though it was consistent, they could never get their head around the fact that I wasn't there all the time. And that's the thing that I found hardest.
Yeah. It's funny, isn't it? Because in some ways, there are pros and cons with both eras, aren't there? Because when it was office culture and it was all about FaceTime, one of the advantages was that when you're not at work, you're not at work, if that makes sense, because you're not there, you're not connected. Maybe if you wanted to actually use the internet, okay, we weren't quite at dial-up territory 13 years ago, but it was less expected that you'd still be checking emails, you know, on your phone from your bed at 11 p.m. Whereas I think these days, because everything is on our phone, you know, our leisure time is on our phone as well, you're not going to go in and turn off notifications at a particular time because it's manual and it takes ages. And it means that it is that much harder if somebody sends you an email at 11 p.m. that says, you know, urgent in capital letters, you're probably going to look at it. Whereas, you know, back 13 or 16 years ago, you just have to wait until the next day. So it's funny, isn't it? Because I think as things have got better in one way and evolved, it's also almost got worse in other ways. I mean, I don't know what your reflections are on that.
Yeah, look, I think it's harder. I think now we have to draw our own boundaries, whereas previously those boundaries were sort of drawn for us because you would physically walk out of the door of the office and not be contactable when you're home. But I think now I've worked in a lot of roles that have been regional and had a lot of contact globally. So in a lot of the roles that I've been in, email and communication, Slacks and other things just come in 24/7. That's the nature of it in a global agency. In the ones that I've worked in anyway. And so you just have to sort of draw your own boundary around that to say, well, you turn notifications off at a certain time of day and you don't go back and look at your phone is the only way that I've found to deal with that. But you're right, you do have to manually go in and do that. You do have to draw those boundaries. Whereas I think previously those boundaries existed for everybody. And so you didn't have to be so proactive in setting them up for yourself.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And it's obviously we'll get onto it talking about Gather. But I think the other thing is that, again, if I think about when I was a kid, you were sent home with loads and loads of pieces of paper, but perhaps you'd get sent home with paper once a week, as in it would be a Friday and you'd get like, oh, this trip is coming up or this. So our fridge was always full of pieces of paper. But I now feel like it's almost both. You have a fridge that is still full of paper, but then the influx of school emails and nursery emails and different platforms for different communications for the preschool, for the nursery, for the school, etc., are pretty overwhelming, I have to say. And like, my eldest has started preschool this year, and it's just, I mean, on our kind of parents WhatsApp group, everyone was just like incredulous. They just said, is it normal to be getting this many emails from the school? I'm just waiting for it to die down, and it hasn't. So it really is so tough. We were talking about the mental load and just holding all of those things in your head. Sometimes it just feels like a bath that the plug is in and it's just continually being filled up from the top, and it ends up overflowing. You end up dropping balls. It's so hard.
That's exactly it. We're drowning in communication. I mean, you think about even the sheer number of channels that we have now. It's not just channels, as you say, the paper on the fridge. It's the emails, but then the WhatsApp groups that go on constantly all day, and you sort of have to dig through those for the important pieces of information, or school newsletters that might be 5 and 6 pages long, but you have to read the whole thing because there might be a paragraph on the fourth page down the bottom that's about swimming next week. And if you don't read that and remember it and put it in your calendar, your child will miss out on the swim lesson next week.
Yeah.
So I think never have parents ever had the deluge of communication to deal with that we as parents do today. And it is with every new channel that comes along. I mean, even WhatsApp wasn't really a thing, you know, 5 or 6 years ago.
No.
Every new channel that comes along only increases that volume of communication. It is overwhelming. You're absolutely right. I don't know any mum that is not overwhelmed by the sheer volume of communication and the number of balls that they have to keep in the air at any given time. And the reality is that we don't. I know that I don't. I know that every mum I know is like, oh my God, yes, I drop the ball all the time.
Yeah.
That's the reality. And when you drop the ball for something that's about your kids, that's not like just dropping a little admin thing for yourself. It often has very emotional ramifications, that feeling in your stomach when you know that you've forgotten something or that you've missed that birthday present or that you're late to that party or whatever it might be, is really tough, I think, particularly on mums. On dads too, but particularly on mums.
Society is always playing catch up with itself, and technology is moving at such a rate now. It is difficult because and I always say this on these episodes, but we're in an environment and an economy where you need 2 incomes to be able to afford the childcare, but our kind of societal expectations haven't necessarily caught up at the same rate. Like, don't get me wrong, they are catching up, and I think dads are putting in more than they ever have before, for sure. But you're still dealing with an environment where women are expected to apparently, you know, not age, be totally up to date with fashion, look put together but not too put together, be slim, healthy, etc., in a pressure in a way that men aren't under. You know, it's not only all of the kind of general pressures of being a mum, it's also the general pressures of being a woman, and the fact that often you're going through having children and all of the kind of pressures that that puts you on from a physical and emotional point of view, but then you come out of that and then you've got perimenopause and menopause. I think you're right to put a lot of the focus on the burden needing to be lifted from the women, because I think that is just part of the reality.
I couldn't agree more. I think that being a woman is impossible in this day and age. It's you can't so win. You know, if you go all out career, then you miss having kids. If you go out all out kids, then there's pressure on us to have a career. I think there are impossible standards assigned to women and mothers in this day and age. And if you think about it, if we were talking about this in the workplace, people in the workplace who are that important, who play those pivotal roles, they have tools and assistance and people to help them do the best job they possibly can. They recognize that those people need support. Whereas I don't think society is very good at A, recognizing, and B, jumping in to help and support women. And it's one of the reasons that we have a gender gap. And until we start to solve all of these, and there's many problems, mental load is not the whole problem, but it's certainly part of it. Until we solve mental load, we'll never have equality. We've got 130 years to reach gender equality. So nobody listening to this podcast will ever experience gender equality unless we change the way that society operates and unless we treat mums and women as important as somebody who is in an office in a corporate role. And I think that's really what we recognize, and one of the things that we want to help women achieve is to recognize that women's time and their well-being and their careers are incredibly important, and they need support to do all of those things, because no one person can do everything that a mum is expected to do in this day and age.
Yeah, you're so right. If you think about your career pre-babies and your attitude to work, was there a magic moment where you realized, wow, this is a real problem? Can you pinpoint that moment?
Always knew, especially in a fast-paced career like advertising, it was from the moment that I had a baby, it was tough. So there wasn't a moment where it was going along easily, I have to say. Although I loved it. I mean, I love motherhood and I've loved my creative career. So I was always very torn between the two. I wasn't a solution out there. And I think as I've been around for a little bit longer, there was a moment, to be honest, Lizzie, where I was completely enraged. So we're very good in Silicon Valley at coming up with solutions that affect people who are creating those solutions.
Yeah.
This isn't a problem that's affected those people.
Yeah, and you're so right, because you see it with all sorts of things, like especially femtech and it just more generally, and the market potential there that is just so unrecognized, because it's solving a lot of problems that the people who receive funding, which is 90% of cases, it's men, you know, they're not solving problems for them. So it doesn't get the same attention, despite the fact that it's just such an incredibly untapped market.
That's exactly right. It's invisible.
Yeah.
And so it slips under the radar, unfortunately. But my hope is that that will change as more women are involved in technology now, more women. Femtech, as you've pointed out, femtech is on the rise. There's a massive market for this, partly because women have realized that there was a US report done last year that noted that women have realized that governments aren't necessarily helping them, society isn't helping them, they're going to have to find the solutions themselves. And so that's part of the reason that femtech is on the rise, is that women are proactively looking for tools and ways to handle it themselves, because unfortunately they don't believe that anybody else is going to help them with it.
I think it's very difficult. I mean, something that you picked up on earlier that I thought was really interesting was the fact that I think sometimes when you're really in the grip of motherhood and of working mum life, you said that sometimes it's really difficult to even notice that something is a problem because it's always been done in a particular way. You just carry on. And I mean, my mother-in-law is someone that I really admire. She worked in a bank for 26 years before she had my husband. And then she, in her words, you know, quote unquote, stopped working. And keep in mind, she's 76, so she is from a different kind of generation. And my father-in-law did a 9-to-5 job and then came home. And she said, oh, well, you know, after I had him, I just kind of stopped working. And I said, well, I'm not sure that's true. And she went, well, what do you mean? And I said, well, didn't you run like a B&B out of your house of like 6 bedrooms for the whole time that my husband was at school? And she was like, I suppose I did do that. I suppose that was working really, wasn't it? And I was like, you ran a business. But because she saw it as it's just an extension of the home, she just didn't value it or even recognize it. And frankly, she wouldn't even be having to run a B&B for what she was doing to be considered work. It's just in those days, it was just like, oh, well, I stopped working. And it's even just the language that we're using to describe what it's like to be a mum, basically, is just so different. And I just couldn't believe that even though she had her own business, because it was being run out of the home, neither she nor her husband ever referred to that as, oh, Cheshire actually had a job. Like, she was working the entire time for 18 years after she quit her full-time banking job. You know, it's just crazy.
Mad, isn't it? Women are so underestimated, and we underestimate ourselves as well.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, exactly. She just took it all on the chin. It was just all a part of it.
Yeah.
So as you said, I think things will be so different even in 20 years as we start noticing things that perhaps you and I aren't even noticing now, right? You know, things that we just do because we've just always done them. So it'll be really interesting to see how it evolves.
Sorry to interrupt. Are you a woman on a career comeback journey or a business looking to empower your female employees during their returnities? Well, let me introduce you to the Spring Back Guide, a revolutionary digital coaching product that's changing the game for women and businesses alike. Our Spring Back Guide is designed to help women go back to work feeling happy and confident. It's like having a personal coach right on your phone guiding you every step of the way. Plus, now here's the real game changer, it costs just a fraction of the price of conventional coaching. No more time-consuming and expensive coaching sessions. With Spring Back Guide, we're putting the power in your hands, right where it belongs. We're not just changing the game, we're changing the way women and businesses consider returnity. So, if you're looking to make your career comeback with confidence, or if you're a business looking to empower your female workforce and want to find out more, visit us at springbackguide.com or follow us on Instagram at springbackguide and join the revolution today.
You said you started Gather with your sister. Was this like a bottle of wine at the kitchen table? Oh, we should do something about this? Or like, how did it all come into fruition? Because you must have had a job before. So it's always such a huge decision to go it alone. So how did that come about?
Yeah, look, it had been something that we'd been talking about probably for nearly 2 years before we took the leap into it. It's something that occurred to us in the midst of COVID, you know, with all those Zoom conversations that we all had in COVID, we sort of got chatting about it. And we really put it on the back burner because at the time, a lot of the conversation was around coping with COVID. There was so much going on that it really wasn't the right time to delve into mental load. Not that it wasn't important, but there were other bigger things, bigger health priorities that people were worried about beyond pure mental load. So we sort of had it in the background bubbling away for a while. And then about 6 or 7 months ago, we're just both at a stage where we were ready to do something a little bit different. And we got talking about this mental load piece again. We decided to put it out as a survey on LinkedIn and on our social networks just to see if we were sort of imagining it or if this was something that women genuinely needed. And we were blown away by the response. I mean, in under a week, we had 320 responses. And yeah, we've taken the leap. We're still going.
It's so huge as well to make that decision, even with your partner, right? Because you know that when you start something in your building, and I know this from my own experience, it definitely has to be a family decision, right? Like one of you goes from earning to suddenly not earning. And obviously you're taking a gamble, like a calculated gamble, but you're taking a gamble and it can be pretty intense. So how have you found the kind of entrepreneur journey so far?
Oh, it is quite the ride, actually. It's been amazing, but you're right. It's a family decision because we've gone from having two incomes into, for now, not having two incomes. So it's definitely a decision. I'm very lucky that my husband is incredibly supportive and also really excited by the prospect of this tool as well. So he's been 100% on board from day one. And I think for my sister and I, and for me in particular, I just got to the stage in my career where I really felt strongly about doing something to make change.
Yeah.
I genuinely did. I'd seen in so many places, so many talented women sort of step back from their careers. And I could see it not only in my industry, but across industries that we just aren't getting women in leadership that we need to. And so for me, I think if I can even play a small role making a change on that, I feel like that for me is even more powerful than the career that I've had so far. So the startup journey is an absolute roller coaster, but we've had so much support so far. We've been in a pre-accelerator program with a VC called Blackbird, who are very large in Australia. We've had so many mentors, so many people really cheer us on and help us along the journey so far. And their reaction and seeing the difference it's made in their lives has just made every moment of the hard work and the uncertainty absolutely worth it so far. So a bit like a runaway train that my sister and I talk about just holding on to, because it really has this momentum and life of its own. I think because it's an area that is in such dire need of help.
Oh my God. I mean, such need. I was chatting to my husband actually, and he was like, oh, what are you up to tomorrow? And I said, oh, I've got this, I think, what, second or third attempt of our podcast recording. And he said, oh, who's that with again? And I said, oh, it's this like AI virtual assistant essentially for like, you know, mental load. And he was like, sign me up. He was like, I can't wait. Like, I literally can't wait. And then he just went into this huge rant about how difficult it was just to keep on top of everything, etc. And I think when you're getting that emotional response from people, you know you're onto something. And I know that feeling myself. You want to feel like you're solving a problem. And I think something like this is, yeah, incredibly exciting. So tell me how it works, because this is the next thing. How does it work? You say there's all these channels. Like, I'm very curious.
Yeah, it's designed to extract, allocate, and anticipate family events and tasks to really reduce that mental load. What that means is that, let's take a basketball use case, for example, right? So imagine I have an email that comes into my inbox about a new time for my son's basketball game on the weekend. The system's designed to scan your inbox to pick forwarded emails and pull out any event that's in there and turn it into a calendar event. So it will sift through and aggregate through emails and messages and all those communication channels to pull out things that are relevant to you and your family, put them on a schedule for you and your family. So let's just say, for example, that basketball game clashed with my regular Pilates time. So it goes through this period of aggregation and then allocating the right person, anticipating and looking ahead so you don't have to think ahead for any potential clashes or problems, and then also facilitating collaboration. So it's really designed to bring your partner, or it might be that your mum helps out, or yeah, that you have a helper or a nanny that helps out. Designed to bring that village of family and carers all into one place. All of the organized schedule keeps you in the loop and communicated with daily about what's going on.
It sounds incredibly exciting, and it's December 23 that we're recording this. What are kind of the next steps for you?
Yeah, well, excitingly, we are going to be in market in late January next year with the next version of the product. So we will be open for people to jump on board end of January. Our pilot's gone incredibly well, and we've had so much, A, great learnings, but B, again, overwhelming response from the people on the program. I was just chatting to one of our participants this morning who just said, oh my God, for me, it's not even the time that it saves, and it does save time. She said, it's the headspace. Yeah. I feel like I've got some headspace back. So it's baby steps for us, but we'll be ramping up from end of January next year and starting to get users from all over the world on board and into the program.
Oh, so exciting. If you're listening to this after January 24, please make sure that you go check that out, because I mean, I 100% will be, and I will be telling everybody that I know. Where do you want it to be in kind of 10 years? And where do you want to be in 10 years in terms of like family, work and life, I guess?
Oh, that's a great question. Look, I think in 10 years, what we'd really love is to be the go-to tool for families dealing with family admin and mental load. That's really the vision that we have, that globally this tool will be out there, available to the world, and be a real game changer for families everywhere. I'd just love to be in a place where I feel like I've created something that's made a difference. That would be the ultimate for me.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's the thing, right? I think is a trend that I see so much with the clients that I work with via the businesses that I work with, which is that they want more purpose in their role. But it's a theme that I find coming up over and over again, which is that motherhood is a real opportunity just to kind of assess your life, because it's a pause, right? You're taking time away to physically have the baby. And anybody who's ever been on holiday knows that if you're away from the office for 2 weeks, let alone up to a year, if you're having a baby, you do think about your job it's an opportunity to take a step back and be like, what do I actually want to do? And lots of people go on holiday and make a decision to quit or make a decision to look for something else, etc. And I think that's often really misunderstood about mums, which is like, oh, well, she had baby, so now she's quitting. And it's like, well, actually, you know, she's had time away.
Yeah,
and you're obviously recognize that. So I guess one of the last questions I wanted to ask you were, how is work a part of who you are? Because it's obviously incredibly important to you.
Look, to be honest, it's always been a huge part of who I've been. I think that's been the case from probably even from high school, is that studies and work have always been a very big part of my identity. And I think that when that's the case and you have children as well, there's always going to be that sort of tension between being a mum and having your career. And so I know I've felt that, I know lots of other women do, but I feel really lucky to have been able to do both, because while yes, it is tough for women right now, I still see that we have more opportunity than ever. And I think even the opportunity to take that pause, to step away from work for a while and come back at it fresh, you know, men generally don't get that opportunity right now. And I think that's something that we're really very lucky to have as well. So there's so many difficult things about being a woman, and I could rant and rave about so many of them. But at the same time, I feel incredibly lucky to have been able to experience all of that in so many incredible places in the world.
Yeah, so true, so true. And very final question that I will ask you, but I could obviously talk wax about this subject all day, which is, do you have a view as to what could be a possible top priority for employers to really think about when considering supporting that back to work journey for mums? What's the one thing, if they could do one thing, what would you recommend that they did?
Well, that is a great question. Look, I think that most employers, what I've experienced at a senior leadership level, is that most employers are very worried about it and they genuinely want to help. They don't know how. And so I think connecting women going back to work with women who have been back to work and been through it and seen the ups and downs is incredibly important. And probably one of the most valuable things that employers could do is put women together with women who have experience in this so that they can share learning, or even just be a sounding board for women who are going through such a period of change. But also, if I look back on my experience, such a period of uncertainty. I mean, everything changes when you have a baby. You're not the same person, and the world isn't the same for you having had that baby. And I think in the past we've expected that women will just go back to work and just drop back in. And I think that's almost impossible.
Yeah, and I couldn't agree more. And luckily, I think we're on the same page over that, because I think that, as you say, I think people want to do something about it. And I think it's part of a reason why I'm trying to push so hard for this kind of principle of having maternity periods as well as maternity periods, just to kind of acknowledge that it is a really crunch point for a lot of women in their careers, and they just need that additional support. And actually, if employers just take a little bit more time to invest in that period and think about the tools that they can use, like Gather or like Spring Back Guide or like all of the other things that are out there, then they can actually make an incredible amount of difference, actually, with a relatively small amount of investment. And I think what's exciting about this is that this could end up being a real differentiator for employers, because it's just such a giant problem and it's such a financial drain, spending a fortune to rebalance your gender balance, you know, with artificial external hires, or when actually you've just lost all this fantastic tacit knowledge that you've been nurturing for so long just because of really simple fixes that you could have made earlier on, you know?
That's exactly it. And that's part of our hope with Gather, is that we will work with corporates to provide the tool for their teams as a support, and not only as a standalone tool, but also as a support network for people. I think that employers have a big role to play in that regard. And I think that most of them want to play that role. For as sure. you said, they just aren't sure of how. They don't have the structures or the things in place to do it. So hopefully we're providing them with a how.
Well, you know what, Claire? I aspire a future partnership. Guys, you heard it here first. Like, that's all I'm saying.
Let's do it. I'd love that. I'd love that.
All right. Well, look, I'm really conscious of your time, but thank you so much for joining me. I really, really appreciate it. And anybody who's listening, seriously, watch this space. I will be watching with eyes peeled, because I think this is incredibly cutting edge, incredibly exciting. And thank you so much for all the work that you're doing. I'm so excited to see it all unfold.
Oh, thank you, Letty. And thank you so much for having me on. It's been an absolute pleasure. For anybody who wants to know more about Gether, you can find us at gether.life. So that's GETHER.life. And we'd love to welcome any of your listeners on board.
How exciting. All right. Well, Claire, thank you so much. And it's your evening there. So have a good rest of your evening.
Oh, and thank you.
Speak soon.
You made it. Thank you for tuning into this episode of Returnity. We hope you found the discussion inspiring and informative. Returnity is about celebrating and supporting women on their back to work journeys. And speaking of support, don't forget about the Spring Back Guide. It's the innovative and cost-effective solution for women and businesses alike. Empower yourself or your female workforce with confidence and success on the road to Returnity. To learn more about the Spring Back Guide and how it's changing the way we approach women's return to work, visit springbackguide.com. See you next week.